year round.
Blog Talk Radio.
Just plain Bill.
And I was thinking for a second when Mars came on that, you know, maybe we should change the music, and then I'm thinking like, yeah, no.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Guard your loins, people.
Hey, you need to ask me how I'm doing.
How you doing, Bill?
I am so wonderfully, stupendously great. I just got a $6,000 raise.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And it's all because of Obama. I think I'll vote for him next time.
$6,000 raise.
$6,000 raise.
If you get a $6,000 raise.
Yeah. My wife and I pay about $6,600 a year for health care insurance. Between Medicare Part B. Part A is free, of course. Part B is about $96 a month, and our Medigap coverage, and our Part D coverage. So about $6,600 a year.
Okay.
But each of us is going to get $3,000 back.
Cool.
I mean, Obama promised that, right?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Well, that's a $6,000 raise.
I'm
paying $1,200 a year now.
I have only one question. Can you loan me $6,000? Because apparently I'm going to be paying that much more in taxes.
Oh, lordy. Well, I'm sorry. You're just making too much money.
Yeah. You know, people just think, you know, okay, I really like economics.
Oh, yeah.
And I understand that for the average person, economics is the most boring thing in the world.
You know, and it's funny that it's that way because it ought not to be.
It ought not to be.
Yeah.
I can honestly say that in my 4 years, almost six years of going to college,
mm-hmm.
I can honestly say that the field of economics was uniformly the most boring set of topics that I took in 4 years of college.
Wow. Isn't that something?
However, I did have a professor tell me that he had seldom met anybody that had the art grasped the art of econometrics as well as I did.
Cool.
And what that means for all you people out there is I have a very intuitive feel for how people spend money in ways that can be quantified.
Yeah. Yep.
That's the metrics part of that, folks. Yeah, that's the metrics part of it. It's the part that relies less, it's very heavy on statistics, but it relies less on statistics than on actual data.
Yep.
It's a really, really strange part. And as a matter of fact, for those of you that don't know, because PCs, we don't pay a whole lot of attention to them, but when you're talking about shared mainframe resources, when you have access to those type of situations for like research and such, you're limited into how many CPU cycles you're usually allowed.
Yes.
And for me, I was forever in trouble with the university lab.
Because you exceeded your CPU usage, didn't you?
Usually, on the first day of the month. And
oh,
almost
really?
Always on the first run through my statistical set.
Huh.
I would burn through almost 8 seconds of CPU time.
Wow.
In one run. Now, people say 8 seconds of CPU time.
That's a lot of CPU.
When you're talking about a billion calculations a second,
mm-hmm.
You know, I was using up, you know, a lot of calculations.
Mm-hmm.
So that my actual professor actually had to go and get me up to 30 seconds so I could simply get the work done. 30 seconds was a lot of CPU time. Average people, when they ran their things, were using 1/10,000th of a second.
Yeah, you know, right.
Yeah. 1/1,000th of a second.
Yeah.
You know, I was using full seconds to run them. Labs would call and say, what the hell is doing our dump? You
know? Yeah, right.
The point here is, statistics are a really bad thing, but data is really hard to fudge. When I put out on a table and say that I have $60 in my wallet, and I take the wallet out, and I count out $60, you can see the $60, I can see the $60, everybody can see the $60.
Hmm.
And it is really important for an economist, especially one that's interested in how the economy functions, to work with data. Okay? Hard and fast data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are very few jobs for econometrics, for people with degrees in econometrics, because they tend to congregate in one of two places. They tend to congregate in the Federal Reserve System.
Mm-hmm.
Does a lot of economic research.
Sure.
And in the government, which does lots of economic research. Now, there's places such as, you know, brokerage houses and, you know, banks themselves and even some corporations that spend a lot of time on certain economic forecasting. But for the most part, it's very, very specific and very, very limited.
Mm-hmm.
One of the places where there's lots of really good, and I mean really damn good econometrics going on, is in the Congressional Budget Office.
Yes.
These people are good. Let me tell you. They can take, you know, a word problem and set it up and run that word problem really, really, really well. But the problem, the difference between the Federal Reserve System and the CBO when it comes to economists
mm-hmm.
running through the numbers
mm-hmm.
is the Federal Reserve System uses data.
Mm-hmm.
And the CBO uses pixie dust.
Yeah, right. Otherwise known as legislative language.
Legislative language.
Yeah.
Okay. And pixie dust has a lot of interesting features. To people that are used to data, pixie dust is like sniffing black pepper.
Ooh.
Okay. Just screws their head up. It just causes you to sneeze, gets your eyes watering, you know, just absolutely does all kinds of really bad things to you.
Mm-hmm.
But to people that live in an entirely different world than we do,
mm-hmm.
pixie dust frees the mind. It disconnects it from reality. It's like a really good shroom high.
Ooh.
I've never done shrooms, but yeah, I'm just taking it from what people suggest to me is going
mm-hmm.
on when they take pixie dust and they breathe it in. okay? And it appears that over the last couple of months that a significant portion of the left side of our political spectrum has been sniffing pixie dust and really catching them. Great. Hi. And us people on the left have been sniffing black pepper, and let me tell you, it's bugging the shit out of us.
Yeah.
Victoria said to me today, she goes, you know, I'm probably going to be on Medicare by the end of the year, because for those of you that don't know, Victoria has been diagnosed with stage 5 kidney failure.
Yep.
Which means that she will be on dialysis sooner rather than later. And for those of you that don't know, and we didn't know this, one of the first things, and this is way back in the 70s, one of the first things that was done with Medicare was to take dialysis patients and yank them onto Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of the few things that Medicare pays 100% everything.
Wow.
Period. You go on dialysis, you know, from the moment you start dialysis, all the dialysis expenses, testing, labs, everything, 100% covered. Boom. And I don't care what age you are. You can be 12, you know, and you get put on Medicare, and that's it. The reason why, as I understood this, as it was explained to me, was that because insurance companies would not touch a person that had been on dialysis.
Right. Yeah.
On any circumstance, and because, and of course the people on the left are going to love this, because a person usually spends 3 to 8 years in kidney failure before they go on dialysis, it is a pre-existing condition.
Oh.
From way back when. So by the time you know that you have a problem with your kidneys, it's usually a year to 3 years into it. Most people don't realize that if you're over 50 right now, you have kidney failure. The question is how much.
Okay.
For the average person, 15 or 20% kidney failure is actually practically not noticeable. When you start getting into the 25 to 50% kidney failure, then you'll start noticing certain symptoms. But they'll be slight. And in most cases, most people will miss them and just assume that, you know, they're just getting old. Kidney failure approaching 75% is when you start noticing other issues going on in the body. But at 75% kidney failure, you're still pretty far away from dialysis. As a matter of fact, Victoria was at 75% kidney failure 6 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So, and stage 5 is considered anything below 15%. So it took 6 years to go for her to go from 25% to 15%. And actually, in her case, she's at 13. So it is a very slow progressing disease. And by the time you know that you have a problem, you've had it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most insurance companies won't touch it. So they knew that that was the situation going into it. Dialysis can be an extremely expensive process, especially when it's done 3 times a week.
Yep.
Because once you're on it, you don't come off of it. Those numbers add up really, really quick, really, really fast.
Sure. Absolutely.
So Medicare takes kidney dialysis very seriously. And once you're on, you're on. Now, all that being said, Victoria is likely to be on dialysis sometime in the next year. She said to me today, she goes, well, I'm going to be on Medicare, but I wonder, you know, how much of an impact that half a trillion dollars they're going to cut out of Medicare is going to affect people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her and I laughed and I said, what are you talking about? She goes, well, they're going to cut $500 billion out of Medicare. I went, no, they're not. Absolutely. And that half a trillion dollars of fraud and waste that's going on, they're not going to find any of that either.
I don't know that I agree with you, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I think what they'll do is they'll find, I think they'll probably find 10 or 20 really big, high-profile, multi-million-dollar fraud program, systems going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll find, 40 doctors and 20 clinics in Miami that have defrauded Medicare out of $40 billion in the last 10 years. I think they'll find 5 or 6 of those, and then they'll find, 3 doctors and 2 clinics and, 800 people that are defrauding them in, Denver or something.
Yeah.
And by the time you add it all up, and there'll be huge, huge press about it and real big things about, court and such like that, by the time you add it up, it might total out to be $100 million.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that wasn't what I was disagreeing about. I think they're going to let the $500 billion stand in Medicare cuts.
Yeah. I don't think so, because I think that was given to ARP for their support.
You may be right. I don't think you are, but you may be. But if you aren't, then about 44% of the population is not going to have health care. They may have insurance, but they will not have health care. Because 44% of the population, 18 and under, 65 and older, will go down the tubes. And they'll go down the tubes not because they don't have insurance, but because there aren't any medical providers.
Right. They can't get care.
We already have docs that are saying, I'm not taking any Medicare patients. I'm not taking any Medicaid patients. Ain't doing it.
I agree.
Yep.
It's going to grow. I mean, especially, the doc fix is certainly not going to occur.
Nope.
So reimbursement rates are going to stay where they are.
Or fall.
They're going to fall because the healthcare reform requires the top 10% of doctors to have the reimbursement rates cut. I don't remember what the percentage was. 20%? 25%, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I knew somebody that was in the industry that I could ask that would, could probably tell me what that cut is. Butch, do you know anybody?
I know my doc, but I don't know that he's going to know. He's a GP.
I gave him this really nice segue, and he's just sitting there, not saying a word. Caller,
yes,
you're on the air.
Hey.
Hello.
We got a caller?
And he's on, but he's not talking.
Hey. Hello.
Hi, Butch.
I got a call on the other line.
Jeez.
So he calls in, raises his hand, says, "Hey, yeah,
well,
talk to me."
Look,
and then
look,
takes
you
another
guys,
call.
Hey, you guys, when my mom calls from Louisiana, I'm telling you, either somebody's dead or something, because she doesn't call. So I'm going to let you guys go, and I'm going to call back in a few minutes. Will you all forgive me for that?
Yep, you betcha.
Oh,
all right.
Sure.
We'll be here.
Why not?
Take care.
Hang up on him. Hang up.
Oh, Lord.
All that effort to get into that segue. See what I get for actually paying attention to callers?
Yep.
Don't call me.
Yeah, right.
Damn people. Don't you know that it interferes with my radio show?
There you go.
So
what were you segueing into?
What's going to happen is the top 10, the doctors that have the top 10% are in the top 10% of reimbursement dollar amounts, not rates, but dollar amounts,
mm-hmm.
Are going to have the reimbursement rates cut. I don't remember what that reimbursement rate cut is. I don't know if it's 10% or 20% or even like 50%. It's a ridiculous number. But what it means is that there are going to be some doctors that are going to get reimbursed at 50 cents on the dollar. None of them are at 50 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
23 cents on the dollar. Some of them are going to get reimbursed at 18 or 19% cents on the dollar. And some of them might even get, kicked down even further. So you're going to have a whole lot of different reimbursement. So we have talked about for years, not you and I, but people in general have talked about, what do they call it? Defensive medicine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doctors doing all kinds of tests so that they make sure that they have their butt covered. This type of situation is going to force doctors to go exactly the other way.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to order tests even when they think it might be necessary because they're afraid that it'll eat into their reimbursement rate. And then they're just going to wait for, outward expressions of whatever they think is wrong before they'll do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to see lots of doctors quitting.
Yep.
I mean, there's already lots of doctors that are disgusted by the Medicare system as it is.
Oh, yeah. Well, not only Medicare, but Medicaid also.
Medicaid, too.
And Medicaid pays less than Medicare.
Did you and I, and I don't necessarily get, I don't get into personal subjects on the radio. but I don't think I actually talked about it on the radio show. I'm almost certain I didn't. 2 weeks ago, I ended up in the emergency room.
Two weeks ago, you told me. I don't know that you told anybody else.
After the show, 2 weeks ago, Tuesday night, things were not feeling really great. I had been having a problem all day, and it got progressively worse after the show. And at 1:30 Wednesday morning, I got dressed and said, I'll be back later. And Victoria looked at me. She goes, where are you going? And I said, to the emergency room. And she goes, do you want me to come with? And I looked at her, and I went, no.
No.
No. First of all, it meant me getting her dressed and getting into the car and me getting her wheelchair out and wheelchairing her in. No. And besides, we'd be leaving CJ home alone. No.
No.
So I went off to the emergency room, and it took them 3 hours. I was out of the emergency room. There was only three people being treated in the emergency room when I got there. The hospital can handle 30 in the ER. So I got attended to pretty quickly, got dealt with. In the end, I probably cost myself about $3,000.
Ouch.
I certainly haven't seen a bill for it yet. I'm sure it's coming.
I'm sure.
After the ER visit, I had a medical device attached to me for a week, and then returned to the doctor to have the device taken off a week ago, before the show last Tuesday. And I met a very nice doctor who I found out when I was in the emergency room, because they were having so many problems, they actually called the doctor on call.
Mm.
And she was it.
Oh, boy.
So when I came in the next week, she already knew everything about my case because she had had to deal with, the ER at 2:30, Wednesday morning the week before,
mm-hmm.
to try and figure out how to deal with me. And let me tell you something. We talked while things were going on, and it was a process that took about an hour. And we could just chit-chat along the way. I was very interested to find out why she had entered a field, I'm not going to get into details with it, that in fact has lots of geriatric clients.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she had planned on being a surgeon. She had done a went into this rotation for a week, and after a week she said, I'm done with surgery. This is what I want to do. And probably a significant portion of her clientele, somewhere in the vicinity of 70 or 80%, are senior citizens. And she said, there are so few doctors now that will treat senior citizens that she feels obligated to do so.
Wow. Wow.
But she said she couldn't be in a private practice and do it. She's associated with the university, the medical teaching center and and such, and she's in a very, very large hospital setting, clinic setting, that takes care of about 40% of the people here in Madison, Dane County area, Southern California, Southern Wisconsin area. She said she couldn't, she could not afford to be in a smaller practice.
Wow.
It just, there'd just be no way for her to be able to do that. That's the kind of situation that Barack Obama and the Democrats have just expanded from the geriatric crowd to the rest of the population.
Yep, absolutely.
And they've made the geriatric crowd much, much worse. I don't understand why ARP is on this, because senior citizens are about to get their heads handed to them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's no doubt about it that it's going to get considerably worse for them. But I don't think it's going to happen in the next year.
No.
I think it's going to take a good 4 or 5 years before people start seeing any really big, huge problems.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be lots of, there's actually going to be lots of problems propping up, but they're going to be assumed to be isolated incidents. It's going to take time for people to start pulling together the fact that the problem we're having in this town with this hospital and this thing is actually occurring everywhere. And as a matter of fact, I kind of got suggested it on Sunday. I said, this is my prediction. Sometime in the next 2 weeks, the mainstream media is going to start telling people that because of the reconciliation, because of the changes they made in reconciliation, the actual cost of Obamacare is going to be closer to $2 trillion.
Oh, yeah.
That's not Obama's fault. That's the Senate's fault for the reconciliation.
Oh, I see. Still going to be all the Dems, but okay.
So it's going to be blamed on the legislative process and reconciliation, that they're not going to be able to get things done, and because they couldn't get the things that they need, that Barack Obama told them they had to do to cut costs, because they couldn't get all agreement down there, that the costs are going to be much higher than Barack Obama promised.
Oh, I see. Totally unexpected. Yep.
And it'll be not blamed on Barack Obama.
Okay.
I wanted all those cuts in there, and Congress just didn't do it.
Yeah.
I would have signed it, but Congress didn't do it.
Yeah.
And of course everybody is saying this is improved Obama's image. His leadership image.
Oh, right. Let me see. You just used leadership and Obama in the same sentence. Shame on you.
Well, when you use 14 months, 20%, 20 points of your political capital, miss meetings, stop foreign junkets, work your brains off and do all this arm twisting, just so that you could get the Democrats to agree with you.
Yeah, right.
I don't know exactly how much leadership you've shown. Of course, somebody said, with all the fighting they've done with the Republicans, and I'm sitting there going, Barack Obama just shot a three-pointer you know, for the win. Democrats
yep.
win.
Yep.
3-0.
Yep.
Other team never played.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, how hard is it to shoot an empty net goal from 3 feet away?
Yep, exactly. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they just spent 14 months, you know, to get legislation passed through two houses of Congress that they controlled.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And, of course, it wasn't exactly what Obama wanted.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
14 months, 20 points of political capital, tons of compromises. They didn't get what he wanted, and all he was able to do was get the Democrats to agree with him.
Exactly. And not even all of them. I mean, that's the best example of bipartisan opposition that I've ever seen.
I look at the people, you know, online. I look at these people going, you know, the Republicans have, you know, forced them to spend 14 months doing this, and I'm like,
yeah, right, sure.
Not a second, not one yeah. second of those 14 months did the Republicans have anything to do with.
That's right. Nothing. Zero.
Pixie dust. It's all pixie dust. You know?
And they had to liberally sprinkle that pixie dust all over that thing just to get the CBO to agree with them.
The damn pixie dust is 3 feet deep.
Exactly.
They're practically waiting in the shit.
Yeah.
it just drives me crazy.
I know.
Anyway, so that's what I said to Victoria. I said, there's no way in hell they're going to make the Medicare cuts. There's no way they're going to screw with the doc fix. You know, there's no way that the waste and fraud are going to be done. You know, this is going to be a true... I said it to somebody else, ignoring Obamacare at this point. I expect the deficit this year to be over $2 trillion.
Yep. I wouldn't
disagree
with that.
They won't report it that way, but on September 30th last year, I'm going to take that number and I'm going to subtract it, the amount of debt this country is in on September 30th last year. I'm going to subtract it from September 30th this year, and that number is going to be greater than $2 trillion.
Yes, it will.
That's a lot
of money, folks.
A ton of
money.
That's before Obamacare even really gets kicking in.
Yeah. I mean, that's before the taxes show up. That's before everything.
So, you know, I have no idea how... there's just no way that's going to get spun right. More pixie dust. That's all I can think about is more pixie dust. Okay. Butch, I hope nothing was wrong with your mother.
Oh, everything is copacetic. Thank you for asking, though. No, we're all good. All
right. Butch is back.
Well, my son had a birthday yesterday, and so that's what she was calling for, but I didn't expect it because the birthday was yesterday, and, you know, so... She doesn't call often, so that made me a little nervous. It was funny. My entire college career, my mother called me twice. Once was a death. The other one, there was a warrant out for my arrest, which is really cool. it was great. Well, no, it was a Social Security mix-up. There was some guy who was wanted for you know, robbing a convenience store in Metairie, Louisiana, or something, and ended up being some other William Porter. And you know, it took us forever to get it all figured out. But she's like, "Well, Butch, the sheriff came by the house today." I said, "What for? What did I do?" She said, "Well, apparently, according to them, according to them, you robbed a convenience store in Metairie, Louisiana." I'm like, "Great." Now, first of all, haven't been to Metairie lately, too. Not in the habit of robbing convenience stores. So that ended up being all cleared up for those of y'all who were curious.
Well, see, now, I had just a little bit of opposite. When I went into the military, into basic training, I got a roll of quarters once a week to call home.
Right.
And after about 5 weeks there, I, you know, put my $3 worth of quarters in and dialed my parents' phone number and said, "The number has been disconnected. No forwarding number has been
disconnected." Oh, no.
You know, it wasn't for, it took me 3 days to get a letter in the mail saying, "We've changed our phone number."
Oh,
thanks.
Boy.
Yeah,
right.
Thanks for the
the heads up there.
Couldn't wait for me to leave.
Yeah.
That is a subtle hint, I'll tell you.
Oh, it wasn't subtle at all.
Well, I want you guys to know that I've not only have I finished my census, the first box, we put a big three, and that's it, and I've also completed my application for the Department of Health and Human Services, because obviously that's where I have to work from now on if I'm going to sell health insurance. So that should be fun.
Yeah.
But I did do my civic duty tonight. Every American has a certain civic duty, and that is watching American Idol.
Really?
I did. Yeah, I watched American Idol for the first time really this season, and I must say, I now remember why I don't watch American Idol. I'm really glad that I'm a kind of a political junkie and, you know, spend my time surfing Drudge Report or whatever, because I think that's a little more entertaining than American Idol is. So did y'all
go ahead. I was just gonna say that I haven't watched American Idol I watched one season of it. I was going to say religiously, but regularly. If you don't know much about American Idol, it was the season that Chris Daughtry.
Daughtry, yeah. He finished fourth.
Yeah, he got booted out. Yeah, he was a finalist, but he wasn't one of the last two. And I thought, damn, that guy's better than anybody I'm listening to on this thing.
And he's made more money than any of them except for what's her name, Carrie Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
he's done really well, and it's good because, you know, I think he's really, really good. In any case, I haven't spent much time watching it. I haven't spent a whole lot of time watching TV at all in the last year.
Really interesting.
The people that say all you do is watch that faux news, I'm like.
Well, keep in mind that since healthcare was reformed 48 hours
ago. Hello?
Hey, you there? Hello?
Yeah, we're there. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, since healthcare was reformed, so drastically 48 hours ago, it is my solemn duty to just sit back and watch American Idol now. I mean, because, you know, what else do we have to do as citizens? That's really our only responsibility. We don't have to worry about paying our bills or, you know, medical bills anymore.
I thought about the idea that, you know, at this point, the most appropriate thing for people to do is, one, get a job with the federal government.
Right.
And two, stop working.
Yep. Well, you know, Milton Friedman did say, thank God that government is inefficient, because if it wasn't, we would be slaves by now. He was right. You know, thank God that they spend those dollars quite inefficiently. But that's a good idea. We should all work for the federal government and then sit on our butt and play solitaire.
Yeah,
so,
you know, there's a whole list of books I want to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I could read the Wall Street Journal every morning. I could read a book. I could spend, you know, a couple of hours on the internet. You know, I'm in the process of writing two books, so I could spend more time working on those. And,
yep.
You know, a federal government paycheck, you know, with bennies and stuff like that, you know, that's worth, you know, $60,000 or $70,000 bucks a year. Even if you're basically just, you know, working as a parking lot attendant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the idea. I really am. I think that's what we should do. And we would still be working harder than, you know, most of the people that work for the federal government now.
Except for I have only one problem.
What's that?
Let me tell you this. Let me tell you, for me, this really screws things up really bad. I really have to, as much as I really want to do that, it makes it so that I can't in good conscience do that.
Uh-oh.
I really like sleeping in until about 8:30, 9 o'clock every morning, and it would just screw that right to the pooch.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, your mental, your sanity and your ability to, your self-actualization might be compromised. And you know, that's a right. You know, you have a right to be self-actualized. And if having to get up and actually work for a living at 8:30 or 9 compromises that, then you know, your rights are being violated.
Yeah.
See, you know, and I'm a night person. You know, I like doing stuff like
that's,
you know,
right,
like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, they would have to work with your schedule, Tracy. You know.
Yeah, that, you know, if they can work it out so that, you know, I can sleep until 9:30, and then get in there like at 10-ish, 10:30-ish, somewhere in that area. You know, that would work out fine for me. You know.
I think we ought to do is create a protected class for night owls, right? In other words, being discriminated against based on being a night person is, well, really, it should be against the law.
Right, and I, you know what, we really need,
especially
to dial
federal.
Down the sun. Because, you know, what happens is at this point, I go to bed.
They're already trying to do that, actually.
You know, I go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, and it's getting to the point here in Wisconsin, 4:30, 5 o'clock, the damn robins are starting to wake up and just creating a racket. You know,
right.
If we just keep it dark for another 3 or 4 hours, the robins wouldn't start doing anything until like 7:30 or 8 o'clock. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
We need to figure out how to do that. How are we going to dial the sun down?
Dial the sun down. Yeah. But anyway, so do you guys know what the immediate effect of this health care bill is, right? Like the number one immediate thing?
Do y'all know? Barack Obama needs to get a new supply of pens.
That too, because he gave them all to the 11-year-old child who was escorting around with him, using as a tool for progressivism and fascism.
Yeah, right.
No, he had that box of pens for signing stuff sitting on his desk for 14 months. Finally got a chance.
You know what? You know what's funny? And I'll digress for a second. There's one thing that I knew for certain when Barack Obama became president, and that was he would be a disaster for conservatism.
Hmm.
The second thing that I knew is that he would be a disaster for liberalism, meaning, like, you know, privacy and, you know, getting the government out of our hair and, you know, the wiretapping and the transparency and all the things that we bitched about with the Bush administration and how bad he was. I knew that he would be worse. What I didn't realize is how much of a disaster he would be for the progressive cause and how completely useless he would be at actually getting anything done. I mean, year and a month, and he's just now getting one decent piece of legislation, according to them anyway. And the funny thing is, it goes full circle, because really the man has been an absolute boon to the conservative cause.
Oh, yeah.
And do you guys know who Richard Viguerie is?
Yes.
I had a chance to meet that gentleman the other day.
Oh, yeah?
And at a function here down the road. And a really nice guy. I kind of expected an, curmudgeon-y, sort of, because I've seen some of his writing and stuff. But he's a really, really genuine, really nice guy. And one of the things that he said was, I want, when you guys wake up in the morning and you think about Barack Obama, what I want you to do is get down on your knees and thank God that we elected that man president. Because if John McCain would have been in there, this thing would still be going, clocking at a slow pace, slowly but surely, our freedoms will be taken away from us. But this guy has done it so hard and so fast in such a corrupt and evil fashion that he's waking up, you know, the sleeping giant, as it were, And
yeah.
Now we have a shot.
Right. There was somebody that said it to me, or posted it was on Red State on Sunday, and he was just pissed. So all you tea baggers, you know, all you conservatives that wouldn't support John McCain, how's that working for you? And I'm sitting there like going, let me see. We've got tea parties. We've got the most engaged populace, you know, in 200 years. We've got a conservative movement that is robust and growing and vocal and active. And we've got two governorships and a freaking Republican in Massachusetts. And I'm sitting there going, I'm thinking great. It's going great.
Yeah, really.
There are a lot of people that believe if McCain was president, then cap and trade would have been passed.
Oh yeah.
Here's what I think would have been passed so far.
And that's arguably harder, better, worse than healthcare. Go ahead, sorry.
There are three things that I think would have happened given what's going on right now. That I think would have happened by this time had McCain been president. Gitmo would be closed.
Yep.
Cap and trade would be signed,
yep.
And immigration would be signed.
Yep.
And,
yeah, you're probably right.
And at least one Supreme Court justice would be out, which we know, and it would be another Kennedy. No, it would be another Souter. We'd have another Souter
mm-hmm.
in there.
That's right. We'd have another suitor, a closet liberal who's been somehow hiding his liberalism for 20 years so that a Republican would nominate him for the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
We would have no tea parties. We would have a conservative movement that would be trying to explain to everybody, you know, what John McCain is doing in a way that doesn't make us look like we're sucking down pixie dust ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and liberals would be just laughing their frickin' asses off.
Yeah, they would.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking that this little piece. Okay, I don't agree with most people in what they say as far as what Obamacare is going to do to our country. Okay, this is another really significant piece of legislation that is going to erode the edges of our liberty in more pernicious ways than other stuff. But
edges?
In the end, as bad as it can be, it's not going to tip us into socialism.
I can only say that I profoundly disagree with that.
That's fine. I'm telling you for exactly the reason that Butch suggested, you know, what Milton Friedman said, is that Obamacare and the regulatory process and government process is going to screw up the implementation of this so badly that I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they put off the implementation for 2 years because they won't be ready 4 years from now to implement this thing.
Well, they're going to start taxing the bejesus out of us in 6 months.
Taxing is easy.
Yeah, I know.
Taxing is easy. Absolutely, you know, spending, you know, takes, you know, people and manpower. And they're idiots when it comes to that. Once they've got everything in place, they can spend like crazy. But getting to the point of spending like crazy, that's going to take time. You know, I honestly believe it's going to take. I honestly believe that by the time they come around to the implementation of this, they're absolutely going to wait 2 years for the benefit side of this, and they're going to say we're just not ready yet. We're going to have to do this right. We're going to spend the next 4 years changing it anyways, and they're going to use that as a complaint that, you know, this isn't what we set up to do, and we've had to keep changing it and keep changing it because legislation is. No, I believe it's bad. It's going to create more problems. But, you know, it's taken 70 years for Social Security to get to the point where it's screwing up. It's taken 4 years for Medicare to get to the point where it's screwing things up. it's going to take 20 years for this to get to the point where it's screwing things up, you know,
yeah,
in a way
ooh.
That is unsustainable.
And I think that's where I disagree with your analysis.
They've got 6 years.
What, 6 years to get the thing right? I mean, this thing doesn't, well, actually not quite that. They've got 3 years to get this thing right because it kicks in when, 2013?
2014, really.
14?
Yeah. The only thing that kicks in now from a benefit standpoint
mm-hmm.
is that insurance companies cannot turn down children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you're a dependent, you can stay on your parents' plan until you're 26, which means
yeah.
I guess you can stay on your parents' couch until you're 26 because who the fuck, you know, wants to go
yeah.
to work?
Rescission stop in 6 months. No more rescissions in 6 months.
Well, rescissions are, you know, it's a rare thing anyway, you know. I mean,
Victoria had rescission 2 years ago. She had insurance 3 years ago, and after a year they said, well, you didn't tell us you were diabetic. She goes, well, yeah, if you look at my application, it says that I'm type 2 diabetic, but you asked if I was a type 1 diabetic, and I'm not.
Right.
And because they said, well, you're a type 2 diabetic, and we only asked if you were a type 1 diabetic, but you should have told us that you were a diabetic. And she said, you asked if I was type 1. I said, no. And I'm not. So they
right.
kicked a year's premiums back to us, you know, which
right.
was really, really nice. They hadn't paid anything for that year,
mm-hmm.
so we got all of our premiums back, but then she was no more insurance again. In any case, you know, you're right, it is rare, it is, but it's as much as good as how many 25-year-olds are going, oh, shit, we dodged that bullet.
Yeah, right.
You know, frankly, I don't think there's a whole lot of them out there at this particular point in time thinking that. So,
the point is that a $750. That's the real agenda here. You know, $750 fine if you don't buy insurance. You know, anybody with a brain in their head who pays taxes will just pay the $750 until something happens.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what I told Victoria. I said.
In New York,
I said, I'm going to get the application for government insurance, and I'm going to have it signed, filled out, and ready, and when they're wheeling me out in the ambulance, I'll put the date on it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right, man. I mean, that's the deal. I mean, it's, you know, basically the federal government has taken, looked at the 7 states that have done health care the worst, and they've emulated it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look at these numbers. I mean, it's a shame. Hey, I'm gonna let you guys wrap up your show, and I'll catch y'all later. Good things happen on the party side of things. We'll have a full board of directors within a week, which is exciting. Executive committee will have a little turnover, so that'll be some new ideas and new stuff going back and forth. And you guys have to get on a conference call once a month. I know you're excited.
Yeah, yeah.
And look forward to it. And we'll talk in a bit.
Okay.
Thanks, Bud.
Super. Thanks.
All right, guys. Y'all take care. See ya.
Yep. You too.
Chairman of the Executive Committee, American Conservative Party, Butch Porter.
Yes. Yeah.
I think for the most part, here's the other part of why I think things are going to go horribly, horribly bad for Obama as far as this is concerned. We are now dipping into general funds for Social Security outflows.
Yep. Yes, we are.
This is 7 years before they expected it to happen.
Yes. And not going to get better.
And it's not going to get better.
Nope.
You and I have talked for the last 6 months about the fact that that whatever green shoots people are saying, are pretty much false. That the economy is going to flip over and, stick its legs up in the air. There's every indication that that is, in fact, happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
We may not see it for another 3 or 4 months, but there's every indication at this point that it's already starting.
Yep.
Which means that Social Security is going to go much deeper into the hole this year than they expected last year. And the idea that they're going to get, 30 years worth of, actually, what was it going to be? Another 20 years of partial funding out of Social Security, you know, before it becomes completely empty. I think they'll be lucky to get another 10 before it gets to the point where, you know, there's no quote-unquote IOUs left. This is the problem. I think if you have persistent unemployment greater than 10%, maybe even 11.5% over the course of the next year, with the corresponding drops in sales tax revenue and general revenues in the states, and government, federal government revenues dropping, I think that the implementation side of Obamacare, things will be so bad 2 years from now that they will have to put off, quote, some of the more expensive things simply because the deficits are going to be in excess of $2 trillion, not one. The economy is not going to be coming back.
No.
Soon as possible, businesses are going to be dumping employees onto the government insurance. You know, as soon as the exchanges are up, you know, we're likely to see, you know, 10 million people get dumped onto it right away. I think there's going to be a situation where there's going to be a really, really hard time to implement this because the economy is going to be so bad that Obama won't be able to say, well, you know, now comes the other $1 trillion worth of costs that this is going to be on top of the trillion that we couldn't cut over the 3 years we were supposed to be doing it. I think today people will look back 3 or 4 years from now and go, while Obama was fiddling in the White House with Pelosi and Reid over Obamacare, the country was burning.
Yes, it was.
You know, and as a matter of fact, I personally want people to see if they can come up with a Nero cartoon with Obama in there, because I think in 2 years, it won't be a cartoon.
No. Unfortunately.
It won't be a cartoon. And the implementation of this Obamacare is going to get pushed back. I really think it's going to get pushed back. I don't think it'll be implemented in anywhere near the way it's going to be. And I said this. Did I say this on the show? I don't know if I said this. No, I didn't say this on the show. This is what I think. I don't think it's going to get repealed.
Okay.
But I do think that once the GOP has control of the Congress, which I expect it to have next year, I think they're going to be able to gut this thing and leave the rotting corpse sitting on the White House front lawn.
That could be.
And I don't think Obama is going to be able to, he might be able to try and veto some of it, but I think if the GOP does it right, they're just going to keep handing him chunks of it, and he's not going to have any choice in the matter. Or they'll make it so untenable for him to sign stuff to get it implemented that he'll have no choice but to back it off. That's my opinion. I think Obama has proven that he is incompetent enough that if the GOP holds Congress, that they're going to screw him to a standstill.
Well, we can hope. And I guess that's maybe about the best that we can do at this point. It does not look good to me. And we'll see where that goes. I'm not
do your shout outs, dude.
Hey, Arkansas Traveler, Just Me Pammy, Mama Gurkha, Louisa Ma, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it.
I will not be around next week, people. Enjoy Bill. I'm going to be on vacation. Bill, I'll talk to you soon.
You betcha. We'll be here.
In the green room.
Cool. All right. Yeah.
Okay. So, I occupied most of the chit-chat time. You know, you disagree with some of the things. I understand that.
Yeah. That's fine.
Oh, feel free.
Yeah, I'm the only thing that I'm saying about this whole thing is that we do not have I don't have any confidence in any confidence in the ineptitude of the either Congress or Barack Obama. I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, we can slow it down. It's quite another to say they aren't going to get enough regulation in place that we will forever screw up the health system that we had. And that's the part that worries me. And it's just, there it is.
It's the pernicious pieces that are going to drive people crazy. You know, it's Pelosi saying this is about diet, not diabetes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's how are the regulators going to implement that point of view that will drive people crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know if we're going to be able to get the mandates in front of the Supreme Court.
I think that's a long shot, but I'm not sure that it's impossible.
I don't think it's impossible, but I think it is, you know, I think it's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be, you know, because what happens is you get in front of the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court says, well, the legislature, you know, created this monster, and they had the right to do so, and it was signed by the executive branch, who had a right to do so. Why do we, as the judicial branch, have the power to decide what the legislative branch and the executive branch have agreed upon? Is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Supreme Court has not been very consistent in limiting the legislative branch's infringement into individual rights.
I agree. I agree.
So I don't know that it's going to be there. And of course, if I don't care if a Souter or one of the other libs on the Supreme Court retire in the next, you know, Stevens is supposedly going to be retiring this year. You know, I mean, so what? Obama's going to replace him with another lib.
Because, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
What are the odds of, and of course, the odds of us getting 50 senators, 50 Republicans in the Senate are practically zero at this point. Theoretically, I think we could actually get 50 if we, cleaned it up and took every single possible seat. If the Republicans were perfect, they could get 50 votes, and then you'd still have Biden out there. I think that was what it was.
Yeah.
And frankly, the Republicans are not perfect, so
no, they aren't.
Democrats are going to still have 51, 52, 53 votes, which means whoever Obama nominates is going to get put through. unless the GOP filibusters. Whoa, now, wouldn't that be a nasty piece of business?
Yeah, I don't know that I want to pin my hopes on that, but yeah, that would. Yeah,
you know,
it would indeed.
That would absolutely, I mean, if somebody like Stevens goes, late in the year, and Obama finally nominates somebody in the, over the winter, and we have a Senate with 52 or 53 Democrats, put them in there, you could have a GOP filibuster of a Senate nomination.
Absolutely.
I think the left's head would explode.
Yeah. Couldn't happen to a nicer group of folks.
I think they've been complaining about, the GOP blocking Obama's thing there. As far as I'm concerned, let's show them what blocking Obama is all about.
Yeah.
Now do we have, do we have 34, 35 senators with balls?
Nope. Not a chance.
Could we sustain a filibuster?
Nope. I mean, you have John Cornyn, Republican out of Texas. I mean, Texas has got to be one of the most reddest of the red states, other than maybe Oklahoma. John Cornyn talking about, we don't have to repeal it. We need to change it, but we still need to be mandating individual insurance purchases here. And it's like, John, I'm sorry, where are you coming from? I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I said it to a bunch of people over the weekend. I think I've said it to you. My problem is right now that the biggest icon on the conservative movement and this healthcare issue is Paul Ryan. People think he's great on the healthcare issue. He's been pounding and pounding and pounding and pounding. But what most people haven't done is paid attention to what he has been proposing. And what he's proposing is Obama light.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I mean, I'm not going to kick somebody to the curb for helping me in the healthcare fight. But I'm also not going to, as, for instance, Lindsey Graham, who absolutely wants, along with John McCain, absolutely wants amnesty. Paul Ryan wants Obama light. I mean, for this fight on this health care, yeah, I will take their help. But beyond that, no, they got to show me their conservative bona fides here.
Well, they were real. It was really easy for them to be no to Obamacare.
Yes. Yep. That was a great call.
As much as Obamacare was a open net shot for Obama.
Yep.
Okay. No to Obamacare was, an open net shot for the GOP.
Yes, it was.
It was really stay out of it. Let them hang themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Forget what the left is screaming and yelling, and forget the complaints about bipartisanship. Stay no. That saves their butts with us. In November.
Maybe this November.
Right, because what's going to happen is next year, we're going to see a whole lot, maybe 20 or 25, GOP senators, show their Republican foundation, their
yep.
unprincipled Republican foundation.
Yep, absolutely.
Which means, you know, we're going to get along with the president.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
have to have
you know,
comity here. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I,
yep.
you know, I my opinion is that, you know, you're right. I mean, we're going to
yep.
get a whole shitload of things. You know, but the other part of what I said was David Frum had a big thing on Monday morning. And that,
yes, he did. yeah.
But I just tore apart. If you guys want to
yep.
see it, it's on my blog, moderatemainstream.
Yep.
.blogspot.com. You know, I just, you know, David Frum, Jesus H.
Yeah.
You know, my problem with the Republicans at this point is there's no principles there.
No, there aren't.
And if I think this is what if Barack Obama, if he's smart, what he'll do now is back off.
Well, nobody, at least, I don't give him any credit for brains, so I don't think he's going to do that. But, yes, you're
right.
If he was smart, he would do
that. If he's smart, what he'll do is he'll back off now and give Democrats a chance to, you know, placate their
mm-hmm.
their districts.
Yep. Yep, yep.
But there's no reason for him to do it. Personally, politically, there's no reason for him to do it.
No.
Now is when he needs to take the cap and trade, immigration, and just shove it down the conservatives' throats.
Yep, because this is the only chance he gets.
And if he does that, okay, he's just going to continue to enforce the mindset that, you know, we are slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if the GOP has no choice but to either continue to be no, okay, which would be the smart play,
mm-hmm.
continue to be no. The problem is you got the Lindsey Grahams and the Cornyns
yep.
that sit there and kind of go, well, you know, he's got this big win, so, you know, we need to, you know, everybody's giving us lots of shit. We could have gotten something out of it if we were willing to negotiate. So
yeah.
they negotiate with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they negotiate immigration, I don't think cap and trade is going to win go anywhere. I think it's dead at this point.
Really?
But I
that's what he's tackling next, or at least that's what the news reports say.
Yeah, you know, if he does immigration, he's got a much better chance of getting something done.
Yeah, that could be.
But you know, hey, if he wants to do cap and trade, ram that down throats too. You know, what he's doing is, you know, pressing the accelerator button, you know, on this economy going into the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
If he tries to cram stuff down and the GOP play ball with him the rest of the year, then I think the Democrats come out better at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I and a whole lot of other people are going to get stuck with the lesser of two evils in November.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I'm in the off year elections. I don't think so. We may get stuck with that in 2012, but I'm not sure that we get that in terms of 2010. We have a number of what appear to be actual conservatives running in 2010. Hello?
I'm sitting here thinking. I'm trying.
Okay.
I'm trying to decide. You know, I'm playing the chessboard here.
Yep.
8 or 9, 10 or 12 moves farther down the line. You know, and yeah, you may be right.
Yeah,
you know,
the nice thing about this is we'll find out. I mean, it's we will find out between now and November, actually now in January, unfortunately, what the so-called conservatives are that are already elected are going to do. You know, and we've got Olympia Snow, and we've got Collins, and we've got Lindsey Graham, and we've got John McCain, and we've got John Cornyn, and we've got all of those people that can do us a great deal of damage.
Of all of the potential things that Obama is planning, cap and trade, I think, does the most damage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a toss-up between that and amnesty.
No, you know, I think amnesty and Obamacare do the same thing. They are corrosive to the moral and the moral fiber of this country. Very corrosive, but corrosive. Cap and trade structurally changes the economy in such a way as to make it non-functioning.
You don't think healthcare does that?
No. Again, because I don't think it's going to get implemented in a way that anybody thinks it's going to.
Well, it's going to get implemented badly, but badly still kills it.
No.
No?
My opinion is that cap and trade structurally changes things to the point where it just does things. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, you think he's going to go into cap and trade next?
That's what the news reports are saying.
Well, if he gets it done before... before the end of July. His first quarter numbers are going to come in. They're not going to be great, but they're still going to be positive. I think GDP is going to be something like 1.5, somewhere in that area.
Hmm.
If he gets cap and trade done, you know, May, early June, I think that's fine. But if it gets into the summer, deep into the summer, and the second calendar, the third quarter numbers come out and it'll be negative at that point, I don't think he gets it done.
Hmm.
I think immigration is the next
choice
and cap and trade just dies. But if he does cap and trade now, he's got to get it done now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, same thing is true of amnesty. I mean, you know, if he's going to do them, he's got to do them right now. Because he isn't going to get another chance.
You know, he can't drag this out for 4 or 5 months. He can't.
Nope. And, you know, if he tries that, we still have 41 votes in the Senate. Now, whether they all hold, I don't know. But we've got a better shot at doing that than we did back when. At least that's what I'm hoping.
See, that's why I think he goes to amnesty. He's got GOP people already willing to do amnesty.
Hmm.
You know, that's why I think it's just, you know, he could get amnesty done first part of May, middle of May.
Hmm.
You know, he could literally come back after Easter recess with a deal on the table.
Mm.
And then he's got, you know, months to play with cap and trade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think immigration's an easy win for him.
I don't. No, that is not going to be easy. Not a bit.
There's going to, you know, the conservative side's going to howl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, right now there's a whole lot of people on the left that considers the conservative side, you know, a toothless tiger because, of course, you know, Obamacare got passed.
Right.
Okay. You know, it's a false premise that they're functioning under.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's got people already on the GOP side that are willing to work with him on amnesty.
Mm-hmm.
I just see it as a quick win for him.
Mm. Well,
cap and trade could get dragged out for a while because, you know, everything that's going on with global warming, you know, is going to get debated and discussed and such like that.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to have any of that with amnesty. But of course, you know, he has not shown any political acumen at this point.
No, he hasn't.
So, you know, the political slam dunk, you know, may elude his ability to, you know, see it all.
That's true.
I tell CJ all the time, you know, a focused person is easy to predict than somebody that is unfocused.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, Obama is unfocused. You know, he is undisciplined, unfocused. He lacks skills in executive and leadership positions. And because of that, he's unpredictable.
That's true. He is unpredictable.
So I don't know which way to go. There's certainly nothing substantive in his, you know, personality that would lead you to believe that he's going to, you know, go in any particular direction on a consistent basis.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say the reports that I read today were at least speculative. I mean, but that was the kind of the consensus of the opinion was that the next thing he would do would be cap and trade as opposed to anything else. So we'll see. I don't think I care which one he brings up next. It is for sure that he is not bringing up jobs next. I mean, he really does not want any private sector jobs getting created here. Now, he'll take all of the government jobs that he can get, but he isn't looking for any private sector jobs.
Maybe I'll go work for the IRS.
Yeah, there you go. I hear they're hiring 16,000 or so. Do you have your health care papers, please? Yeah. Okay.
Well, all right. Well, at this point, you know, the weeping and gnashing of teeth are going to go on for a couple more days, I think.
Yep. I think you're right.
I you know, my opinion is that, you know, for conservatives, this is another, you know, notch in, you know, our side. I think that Obamacare is going to be a significant disappointment.
Oh yes, for everybody.
To a very large segment of the population, and I think if I'm right in what I think that's going to happen over the next 3 or 4 years, there's going to be a whole lot of people really, really pissed at him when he gets put off.
I think you're right. If
I think what'll happen is, in 2011, next year,
mm-hmm.
I think they'll start seeing if things are economy wise continue to go bad. I think they'll start talking about pushing it off, and I think they'll try really, really hard to make sure that nothing comes up in 2012.
Between now and then.
And I think they'll do a really, really big job of making lots of, you know, big fanfare about this is getting ready to get set up and this is getting ready to get set up. And then after Obama gets his second term, which I don't think is a done deal by any stretch of the imagination.
Nope.
If he gets a second term, when he gets a second term, I think that's when, in 13 is when they're going to say, because of the things that are going on, we're just going to have to push off those two things. I think the left will howl like crazy at that point. But Obama won't care. He's in and done.
Yep. Well, I guess we will see what happens.
Luisa Ma on Twitter suggested that my opinion about what would have happened with McCain would have been offset by having Palin on the ticket. I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, vice presidents generally don't get to set the policy.
You know, I think Cheney had a great deal of influence on Bush the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think by the end of 2003 or beginning of 2004, I think Bush finally, was, I don't say was pushing him out, but was spending less time paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Yep. To his discredit, I think, but nevertheless.
Yeah, to his detriment. Absolutely,
yeah.
To his detriment.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, kiddo, I will let you go. I'm going to eat dinner, and then we'll continue on from there. Have a great time in Southern California.
Yep, 9 days in the sun.
There you go. All right. And hopefully it won't rain.
Yeah, it's actually raining there now.
Yep.
So, all right,
yep.
We'll talk.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, Bill. Bye.
Bye.